In chapter 6.10, I will explain how the diffusion coefficient can be calculated in an MD simulation. Diffusion, of course, is a very fundamental process, not only in physics, but also in neighboring disciplines like biology, chemistry. And it's in principle a microscopic process, but the standard equations that are used to describe it are kind of macroscopic. And the first equation that's important in this context is the so-called Fick's law, which is equation 114, and which just says that if there's a concentration and this concentration is not constant, so there the gradient of the concentration is non-vanishing, then there will be a current of particles. That's kind of easy to understand if you just imagine that you have a system which is subdivided into one hand side where you have a high concentration and another side where you have a low concentration. Then of course we know that the velocities of the particles depend only on the temperature. So the velocity would be the same in the high and low concentration region. But then of course the flow of particles that goes from the high concentration region into the low concentration region is of course larger, just because the current essentially is a density times the velocity, and well, on one side you have a higher density, so more particles are flowing away from that region. So that's essentially now, if you take infinitesimally small slabs of a system, and you apply kind of these ideas, then you get this Fick's law equation 114. So there, you see now there's this proportionality constant, which is this diffusion coefficient. And so that's a transport coefficient. It's in principle a macroscopic quantity. But we will see now in a moment that you can calculate it also from a microscopic, that means from an atomistic simulation. So we will consider now in this case a so-called self-diffusion, where we just have one kind of particles, and we just see, we pick one particle and kind of we see how it kind of diffuses through the other particles. Of course, that's in contrast to kind of the simplest experiment on diffusion, where you have, let's say, a drop of ink that you put in water. So you have kind of two different particles, ink particles and water particles, and then you can watch how the ink particles are spreading in the water. So here, let's say, yeah, we don't have colored particles, they are all identical. We have this so-called self-diffusion. Okay, but we can now combine this Fick's law now with another fundamental equation, which is the continuity equation, equation 115. So this equation also has a very simple interpretation. It just says, well, let's consider again an infinitesimally small volume where we have a concentration C of certain particles. And then this continuity equation just says that if the delta of J, if the divergence of the current is non-zero, then that means, of course, more particles are flowing, let's say, into the volume than are flowing out of the volume. And then, of course, that means that the concentration has to change as a function of time. So we get this derivative dc dt. Yeah, so that's, again, I mean, this equation is essentially just an expression of the fact that kind of particles are conserved. They cannot appear or disappear, and then this equation has to hold. Yeah, now if we combine equation 114 and equation 115, we derive at this famous diffusion equation, which is equation 116. Yeah, again here, of course, you see we have this diffusion coefficient d. Yeah, now we can actually find an analytical solution to this equation under the boundary condition that the concentration, that's equation 117, the concentration at time zero is a delta function. So all the particles that I want to consider, they are well in a very, very small region around the origin. And then if we solve the diffusion equation, we get the time evolution actually of this initial distribution, that's equation 118. And so we see Those particles are kind of spreading out. I mean, like you can imagine again here, perhaps that we would have ink particles, right? We have initially a drop that can be approximated by a delta function, and then the particles are diffusing away from this original droplet, and actually the shape of the distribution is then a Gaussian. So you see we have this exponential minus r squared divided by 4 times the diffusion constant times the time. So you see, because we are dividing here by the time, this Gaussian is getting broader and broader. And then, of course, if it's getting broader, I mean, the number of particles would increase. So because of that, we have to still to divide by this normalization factor that goes like 1 over the temperature to 3 halves in 3 dimension. Okay, so equation 118 is the solution. And now, of course, once we have the solution, we can calculate expectation values. So, for instance, we can calculate the expectation value of r squared. That's equation 119. And that can, again, be done analytically. And then if you calculate the derivative of r squared dt, you find that that's proportional to 6 times the diffusion coefficient. So that's equation 120. Yeah, so now that equation actually is an important one, because it establishes the relation between this kind of macroscopic transport coefficient, which is a diffusion constant, and then the microscopic trajectories of an atomistic system, right? R of t is the trajectory of a certain particle at time t. So this equation actually was derived for the first time by Einstein. And yeah, it's a basis for numerical work. Okay, now of course we can have also the case where the particles are not at the origin at time t equals zero. Instead, let's say they are at a position ri superscript zero. And then actually this equation 120 becomes equation 121. Where we have 6 times the diffusion coefficient now is a limit of ri of t minus ri of 0. So that's just the displacement from the original position after a time t. And now, of course, also if you want to get good statistics, it's advantageous not to consider only one particle, but to consider many particles. And that's why I sum here over all the particles. And then, of course, to get an expectation value, I have to divide by the number of atoms, and also, of course, still by the time. Yeah, so that's this quantity on the right-hand side of equation 121. That's, of course, obviously a quantity that can be calculated in an atomistic simulation. There is actually a problem if you use the formula as it stands there. You remember we typically use periodic boundary conditions, which means actually that whenever a particle, right, goes out of the box, that means if the distance from the original position becomes large, it's folded back into the box, which means that the position probably gets again smaller. So that means in the end, it means that in this equation 121, this quantity ri of t minus ri of zero, that can never be larger than the side lengths of the box. And then, of course, in the limit of big times t, then we see, according to this equation 121, also diffusion coefficients would tend to zero. Yeah, what can I do about it? I mean, one possibility is that I allow now the particles really to diffuse out of the central box, so not to kind of fold them always back into the box, and then I can actually calculate this quantity, but I have to introduce then, I mean, essentially a second set of coordinates where the positions are kind of not folded back into the central periodic box of my simulation. There's an alternative and perhaps more elegant way to calculate the diffusion constant. And that it's based on the observation expressed in equation 122, namely very simple, of course, observation, right, that the difference between ri of t and ri of zero, That's just the integral from 0 to t over the velocities. Okay, now I can plug in this equation 122 in my equation essentially 121. And okay, then I get those first equations here on page 141. And so if you look at the first line, uppermost line, okay, we see we have to integrate this function v of t prime times v of t double prime. And of course, it's a symmetric function. And so we are integrating from 0 to t, both variables. So that means we are integrating over square. But we know in this square, kind of the values in the upper part, I mean, we can look at, we can subdivide this square by drawing a line along the diagonal, and then let's say we have our upper part, an upper triangle and a lower triangle, and then those two, in this upper and lower triangle, this product vi of t prime, vi of t double prime, of course, is identical. So that means actually we can now integrate only, let's say, over the upper triangle, and then of course we get this factor 2, right, because we're integrating now over a surface that's kind of half of the original surface, and then, well, we can express it in that way. Yeah, then we still assume that we are in a equilibrium situation. That means there is now a kind of special time zero. That means we always can kind of shift or displace the times. And that's then what I do in equation 123. Okay, after exploiting that, then I get the formula 124. And then still substituting this t minus t prime, I get the final formula 125. Okay, so what does this formula tell us, right? It tells us again that this quantity 6 times the diffusion coefficient now is the integral actually from 0 to infinity. Okay, again, I divide by the number of atoms. I still have this factor 2, which comes right from this upper triangle. And then, okay, I have this now important quantity, which is vi of tau times vi of 0. So what do? I compare the velocity vectors at time 0 and at time tau. So this function actually is called velocity-velocity autocorrelation function. And it's kind of easy to see how it behaves. Of course, if this time tau is very small, then you can imagine kind of that you have, well, you have some initial velocities v of 0, and then your particle is traveling for a time tau without undergoing a collision, which means that the velocity vector is at time tau is identical to the velocity vector at time 0. So in this case, you have perfect correlation, right? I mean, the velocity vectors at the two different times are exactly identical. On the other hand now, if we look at very large times tau, then that means that if you start again at time 0 and follow kind of the trajectory of our particle, then probably it will have undergone a large number of collisions. And each collision, of course, the velocity vector is changed. And in this case, actually, we expect that there's no more correlation whatsoever. So this scalar product between those two vectors is on average is 0. I mean, the two velocity vectors, they can point in the same direction, they can point in opposite direction, or actually in most cases, they will more or less be orthogonal to each other. And so that means, yes, on average, this product will be 0. Of course, that's also necessary because that shows us that this velocity-velocity autocorrelation function is decaying. Actually, you can show it's decaying exponentially. And that means that you can actually calculate the integral from 0 up to infinity of this function. Yeah, so that's now actually, this equation here is an example of a so-called Green-Kubo relation, which express transport coefficients through certain correlation functions. Okay, so here, right, our correlation function was a velocity-velocity autocorrelation function, but you can calculate in this way other transport coefficients, like, for instance, in equation 126, I give the green Kubo formula for the electric conductivity, right, another transport coefficient along the z direction. And there, for instance, you find that this quantity is related to the autocorrelation function of the electrical currents, right, this ji z of tau times ji z of zero. Yeah, there are many more formulas of this type. For instance, you can calculate also things like thermal conductivities, shear velocities, and so on. And yeah, that's widely used actually in computer simulations.